Hello, and a warm welcome to the Reform Party podcast. Last week we did a mash of what had happened in 2025, and this week we're going to look forward and see what we predict is going to happen in 2026. So I'm joined today by my fellow co-host, Wendy Whittaker-Large. Hello, Wendy.
Hello, hello, Ken.
And also by Dan Barker, who's a board member of Reform UK. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Ken. Hello, Wendy.
Right, so as I say, I just wanted to just try and get a few, not predictions as such, but just have a bit of discussion about what we think might happen in the coming year. So first of all, will there be a general election this year, Wendy?
No, I don't think there will be, even though I would say that Labour's support is sliding at a rapid pace. We can see the downward trajectory in the polls. I think they would be mad to call a general election now. Well, although I wish they would, let me tell you, I wish they would, but I don't think that they will. I think they want to see through their socialist agenda as much as they possibly can, probably in the knowledge that they will not be in government for another 30 or 40 years, potentially. So I would say no.
What do you think, Dan?
Well, I think it's possible on only one scenario, which someone else kind of put this to me. I was initially skeptical. The more I thought about it, the more I thought it's just possible. Andy Burnham, as we all know, has been looking for a seat, and because ultimately by-election seat candidates will be the down to Keir Starmer, he's never going to allow that while he's still got a pulse in his body and he's a prime minister. However, it is possible that Andy Burnham could become the leader of the Labour Party, which is a separate role. And there's a mechanism that could happen. And then once he gets into that position, he could call a general election with Starmer as a sitting PM. He could choose his seat because he'd say, I'll look after you, whoever he displaces, he'll choose a safe seat somewhere in the country. And he'll come in and he'll say to people, really sorry about the last couple of years. That's not what you voted for. That's not what Labour's about. Give me and my team another chance. And by the way, Reform and the Tories are not ready. And I think he would do a big gamble. They would lose a big chunk of their majority. They'd still have a working majority. And you would see most likely Reform leap into becoming the official opposition. I think his government would last no more than 2 years because this is the guy who, after all, has said, you don't need to worry about the markets, just ignore them. And he is a socialist and he likes to spend other people's money. And he would point to Manchester and say, oh, look at all the success story, look at the skyscrapers, look at the yellow buses, et cetera, bucking the trend nationally, give me a chance. He's likable, he's a good media performer, he would have some credibility, and he's not part of the current mob. He's not associated with any of that negativity that's been going on in the last 18 months or so. I think he is their only hope, and I could see it'd be unprecedented. But it would be the only way he's going to get to Parliament while you've got any of them, not just Starmer, anyone else who's there now is not going to let him in either. So I think that's the only way he's going to get there. That will be my theory for a general election. And it would favour Labour to go as early as possible because it would then mean that the competition's not ready. So it could be as early as May. If not, then it would be after conference, so probably an autumn election. That's my theory at the moment.
But what seat do you think Burnham could get? And what seat do you think, even if somebody stood aside for him, which one could he win?
Well, he could have the pick of, I mean, isn't it Keir Starmer's got the safest seat in the country, allegedly in Labour? He could say, I'll take your seat, you're not going to stand again, are you? Because there's no role for you here. And I think he probably would go off and do something else and say, is it King's Cross? I think number one seat for Labour, I'll have that seat. And or if it was somewhere else, he'd say, I'll find you another seat or I'll find you a job.
I mean, I have to say, I think that's all fairly implausible. I don't think there will be an election this year. I think the only way it could happen would be if Starmer tries to use the situation to his advantage and to threaten the Labour Party to say, look, if you're trying to change me, if somebody else is standing against me and you want to change me, I'll call an election and bring you all down. And of course, there's no appetite for that because virtually every Labour MP knows that it's very likely that if they go to an election, they'll be losing the 90,000 a year and all the other things that they get as an MP. So there'll be no appetite for that. But I just wonder, Starmer might get to the point whereby he just does it out of spite. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yes, I could see that one as well. Yeah, just call him. Just be like Rishi Sunak, where he just turns up one day and says, "I went to the palace first on the way to work. We're having an election today," and it's news to everybody. Yes.
I think when Rishi did that, he truly believed that the Conservatives could win another term. I think he wouldn't have done that if he felt that it was, a done deal and that Labour were going to get in. Clearly, the risk was that Labour was, biting at his ankles, nipping at his ankles, and there was always the opportunity there for Labour to win the general election, which of course they did. But I don't think Rishi Sunak thought that at the time. Whereas I think now it's very, very clear. I think we've had 100 successive opinion polls that has put Reform at the top position, anywhere between 27% lead, sorry, 27% of the vote, the people who've been polled, to 31, 32%. So if unless the polling is seriously out of kilter, and I suspect actually we have far more support actually than those polls are showing, I think it's very likely that if we were to go to the country very soon, Labour would lose their majority altogether. In fact, I think that it would be very interesting to see who the official opposition would become. I think it's most likely that Reform would win. I think the other reason why is because I think Reform has an excellent campaigning engine. We have probably the best campaigner in the world currently, maybe the second best campaigner in the world if you count Trump, on our team, and that's Nigel. And he is a formidable campaigner. He is
No
a
doubt about
fantastic communicator. He's brilliant at connecting with people. He's wonderful at crystallizing the issues and being able to communicate those in everyday language to people so they understand it. And I simply don't think that any of the parties have got that in their leadership. Kemi's not bad. She's doing pretty well at Prime Minister's questions. She is a little terrier. And in terms of opposition, she's certainly giving them a run for their money. But she is no match for Nigel. And, when it comes to the other leaders, well, where are they? And we can see Starmer. His performance is pitiful, not only in public, whenever he makes a video, you just want to cry. Whenever I see him on video, I just think, no, don't do it, Keir, don't do it. Because he's wooden. He feels inauthentic. I don't really know what he's trying to communicate. The message always feels very plastic and faulty. He's just not a good communicator. He doesn't inspire confidence. He doesn't inspire anything. And therefore, I think when it comes to campaigning, you set Reform up to campaign, and boy, oh boy, you're going to see that machine start to work. And I think that is what the Labour Party knows very, very truly is our strength. And I think even though there's the possibility that the Greens may well also take more seats because they've got Zach Polanski, who, although I think he is probably rather unstable, and of course I completely disagree with all his policies, and he's a little bit crazy, I think. He's a little bit mad, woo-woo.
For the
But then I think,
Greens.
yeah, exactly. But I think there is, again, even in Zach Polanski, I think he has garnered some of those people on the further left on the Labour Party who perhaps would have gone with your party, whatever they were called. It's your party and I'll cry if I want to. The Jeremy Corbyn effort. But I think because of the terrible lack of coordination and the fact that that seems to have just completely dissipated and fallen apart, I think a lot of people have thought, right, I'm going to go with the Greens. So I think it's going to be interesting to see that we now have this much more multiplicity choice for voters. We've got lots more parties that are making their voices heard for voters to join up with, a vote with, etc. But I still feel that overall, above, head and shoulders above everyone, is Nigel and Reform.
I could just add, I mean, I
Sure.
totally agree with you, Wendy, in terms of Nigel and his campaign ability. But just a story I had it before Christmas in a taxi going across London, and chatting to the taxi drivers. You know, they do always very chatty. He didn't mention that I was anything to do with politics, and he was moaning about Sadiq Khan, this guy, and he said everyone he knows is voting Reform in London. We're going to do very well in the kind of London elections because everyone's sick of him. And then he said, "Where are you from?" I said, "Oh, Manchester." He said, "Oh, Andy Byrne, oh, would have him as Prime Minister." And then he started waxing lyrical about him because he says he's likable. I think this is the thing you can't underestimate about Andy Byrne, is his popularity. Well, for a while anyway, until people see what his politics are really like. So I think he is Labour's secret weapon, if they would even acknowledge that at the moment.
Interesting. So you don't think Angela, our Ange, has got a
Oh my
chance of making a
gosh, not
comeback?
Angela. No, that's the worst of all worlds, I think.
So are we all agreed that Starmer will not be in Prime Minister by the end of this year?
Yes, I'd agree with that.
I'm not
Yes.
sure. I'm not sure. I would like that to be the case, but I think the Labour Party want to hold on to power, come what may. And I am not sure that there is the desire or the mechanism at the moment to get rid of Starmer. I may be wrong about that. Maybe if I was to speak to the backbenchers, they might say, "Oh, we can't stand him. We hate him. He's causing lots of people to turn against us." And I think that is absolutely true. I think in the population, people really cannot stand Starmer. People who 18 months ago
Yes.
were lobbying for the Labour Party. Now they've completely turned around. Look at what's happened in the U-turns even today on pub landlords. It's a government that is incompetent. It's a government that doesn't know what it thinks, what it believes, what it's trying to do, except all it can think of to do is to tax people more heavily and spend the money on worthless projects and worthless causes. So there has been this this sense in which I think they are a little bit lost. I think I'm not sure that they will actually get rid of him, even though another party with the same dilemmas, for example, if it was the Conservative Party, he would have been gone by now, because we know how fast the Conservatives were at getting rid of their leaders, because they could do it by the 1922 committee. And Graham Brady was very, very clear about what the process was. If he got enough letters, that was it. There was a vote of no confidence. The leader left and a new leadership election was called. And that was it. Here we go again. Not another
Yeah, but
one.
there's not that kind of mechanism within the Labour Party structure to be able to do that. And whilst I heard what Dan said about Burnham, possibility for Burnham to do it, I just don't honestly don't think it will happen. So I suspect that Starmer will be gone, but I think he will resign in after the May elections. I think that's
After
what the
May.
way it will happen. It will be totally we handed the revolver in a darkened room.
I think you're right about the date, Ken. I think May is the date that we will all be looking forward to. Is it May the 7th, which are the elections? And so will the
Oh,
results will be through May 8th, 9th, 10th, etc. So those are going to be key dates. We should block out 2 days in our diary to digest the news, to understand the results, and to make our predictions. And I think you're absolutely right. I think following the May elections, notwithstanding, of course, Scotland, we have to, and of course, Wales, we have to recognise that we have two devolved governments there that are also up for election. And it isn't just local elections in England. These are two extremely important and influential elections that are going on as well. And for me, it's those that are going to flip the card for Starmer, probably more than the local elections in England, actually.
I mean, just on that, the timing wise, you've got to put yourself in the sort of Labour Party MP activist shoes. If you wait until May, and you're like, you've got the devolved elections as well, and there'll be results from those, and the forecasts are they're not going to be good for Labour, is why do you wait till then, till the damage is done, and then get rid of Starmer? You've lost a load of councillors, you've lost seats in Senedd and Holyrood. Whereas if you got rid of him now, sometime in the next couple of months, installed a new leader, and that could at least be a mark a step change. They could at least try and put all this behind them. Reeves would probably go as well at the same time, I imagine. It would be drastic, but I think they are in that kind of desperate territory now. I would have thought those are the conversations that are going on in the back rooms in the Labour Party, is how do we get rid of him and can we get rid of him as soon as possible? This is where I think Burnham is, because he's kind of left it too late. In some ways, he should be there on the back benches now. However, he did go to conference. And he basically said to them, overthrow your leader, didn't he, for the first few days. And I think he was playing it for the moment, not for the conference, but for now in this lead up to May. And I think it'd be interesting to see what happens over the coming weeks if this does materialize as this theory. It will be quite exciting to watch, I think.
Oh yes, get your
Okay, well
popcorn,
we've done
folks.
yes.
We've done Starmer. What about the other current party leaders? Which of them do you think will still be in position at the end of this year? Kemi?
I think she probably will. Again, it depends on her performance, doesn't it? Reading various different media outlets, there's a sense in which Robert Jenrick is apparently rather dismayed at how well Kemi's been doing, because I think he was hoping to step forward as leader if she was, if she was ousted from that position. But you can see that following the Conservative conference last year and her performance at Prime Minister's Questions up until Christmas, they did have a slight bounce back in the polls, the Conservatives, and their ratings started to go up a little bit. And certainly in some polls, you can see that it's Reform, and then second, it's Conservatives now. So whereas prior it would have been Labour, now Conservatives have taken Labour. So I think the Conservatives are feeling a little bit more gung-ho, a bit more confident with Kemi as their leader. So I think the local elections, though, again, I have to say, I think the local elections for the Conservatives are going to be critical, because I think that is going to be a real test for them. Can they get their voters out voting for them when, frankly, again, many times I read what Mel Stride says, I read what other parts of the opposition are saying, and I just don't feel the Conservatives have really changed. They haven't learned their lesson. There's no sense of a real sense of, apology or change from who they were before. And, I don't see any difference in any of their policies. They're still, in my view, picking winners, which I think is a really bad economic policy. Whereas I think with Reform, we're perhaps not 100% clear on everything. We know we haven't got all our policies written and distributed, but I think in terms of our central convictions, we as a party are very, very clear. And I think that's what the public likes. There's many people out there who are not political at all. I'm sure many of us have got friends who really aren't interested in politics. They are not the mad people like we are, who eat, drink, sleep, breathe politics. They don't. So when it comes to election time, what those people want is to, if they're going to vote, and again, this is another big problem in the UK at the moment, is that we have people who are disinterested in politics. They feel that nobody supports them, nobody represents them, nobody speaks up for them, and they're not going to vote. And I think this is why Reform is really a movement for change, because what we're saying is get involved, listen, read. Think, talk, discuss. We're interested in your view. We want to hear from you. We want you to make your voice heard, but we also want to explain what our position is. And I think that is really hitting the mark for a lot of people. So I think that when it comes to the other leaders, I think Ed Davey will probably still be there, because I think he strikes me as being quite a bundle of fun. And a bit like Nigel, you want a bit of fun in your leader, don't you? I don't think he's a particularly serious politician. And again, I don't think the Lib Dems really know what they stand for. They've sort of got this mishmash of different policies.
I have to disagree with you entirely there, Wendy. I don't think
Okay.
Ed Davey is of any use whatsoever to anybody. And I actually think that if you analyse it, that where the Lib Dems are, they're not really making any progress. And with the situation with the Labour and Conservative falling away so badly, I think the Lib Dems should be making a lot more progress than they've been doing. And I actually think that Davey will be lucky to survive the year. I think the people will come for him.
And who do you think will re replace him, though, Ken?
Well, I would just, can I just chip in on that?
Go
I
ahead.
would agree on that one. I think there's a few, like Daisy Cooper seems very ambitious. She's a deputy, or is a deputy, I think. But I agree with Ken's view there. I think they should be profiting more by the demise of the Tories and Labour. Certainly locally, I've seen, you can see in Trafford, where Labour have lost votes on a by-election, you can see almost vote for vote, the Lib Dems picked it up on their side. So you think that will be happening nationally as well. But I do, just on the Conservatives, I really think now people are not really listening to them, and that's worse. The worst possible place to be in politics is where no one's really interested in what you're saying. And I think what Kemi needed to do, and I thought she was going to be a stronger leader than she has been, is as soon as she was in the post, she needed to out Farage, or at least try to do that. I know she said we'll go slow and we'll do policy, but they don't have any credibility. They've had 14 years in power, and we're now living with a mess that Labour are now making worse. So coming up with well thought through policy is just falling on barren ground. What they needed to do was kind of reassert what they stand for, what their values are, and try and buy back some voters. And I don't think that's happened. I don't think someone like Jenrick now, I think he might be looking at this and others in his category actually, who've got credibility, a little bit of credibility, might be thinking, do I challenge Badenoch for the leadership and then try and lead this party of liberals to somewhere in where I can actually get some more seats? Or do I start making noises about joining Reform and just go and talk to them, because that might be they've got a better future in our party if they were accepted. There's no guarantee there. I think people, we've been polling over 30% now. I think actually, Wendy, it's nearly 200 polls, not 100. So they'll be looking at us thinking this is not just some rounding error. This is a thing. Reform are here. And after May's elections, I think you're right, the Tories won't do very well. They'll lose seats. We'll gain from them. We'll gain from Labour. And they might be thinking the writing is now on the wall for the Tory party for a lot of people. So I think it'll be interesting to see what happens there. And in terms of Zach Polanski, I think he is exactly what the Green Party have been looking for a very long time. And it's good for us. They're polling better, but when they had Carla Denyer in post, she was a very, pleasant, acceptable face of the Green Party, and he actually represents what they represent. You can see in him with his policies and his mannerisms what they really stand for, and I think that's a good thing. People can see what they're voting for.
Yeah, true.
So you don't think you'll go back to his hypnosis, no?
He might be still in it, Ken. He might still be doing it. Why are people joining the Green Party?
Do you think if in the middle of the year, if it looks as if Badenoch is going to stay the course, do you think that will be the point at which Jenrick would jump to us? I think as long as Jenrick's got the possibility of replacing Badenoch, he won't jump. But if it became clear that Badenoch wasn't going anywhere, perhaps if the Tories do a bit better in May than we expect, then that's the point at which he would want to jump. So on that, is there anybody else in the party, in the Conservative Party, or any other party who you would like to see defect?
Esther
Can I
McRae.
go first on this one? I'll tell you one.
Sorry, you can.
Run. I do tell you who I do like, who's done a lot, is Katie Lamb in the Conservatives. She's done a lot on kind of immigration and on the kind of welfare state that you used to know. That's actually, kind of cut through on social media and that sort of thing. And I don't really follow the Tories anymore very much now. So I think she'd be a good addition. She's young, she's female. I think she's the first time as an MP this time.
Yes, I think
Maybe
she is, yeah.
she is. So fresh, full of ideas. I think she'd be a good addition to Reform. I don't know if she's thinking about us, but I think she would fit in very well.
I personally would like to see Esther McVeigh. I followed Esther's career over a number of years, and not only does she bring a bit of necessary glamour, which we all like a little bit of, I also think that generally her policies are truly conservative. And what I mean by that is small states, low taxation, low state expenditure. And I think she has got the kind of force of personality as well to cut through with people. She has a strong majority in her seat in Tatton, although it's come down significantly at the last general election, but nevertheless she still won that seat. And I think she's well liked. I think there's an element of sort of disruptiveness to her as well, because she's willing to call out things that she sees. She's willing to call out when things are wrong. She's willing to point the finger and stand up for what's right and what she believes in. And I think that kind of attitude is very important, because I think that we can't be a party that sits back and waits for things to happen. Obviously, I'm not suggesting that those in leadership are like that at all, but I fear that we could in the need to have a number of candidates put forward at the next general election, a number of candidates we're going to need in local elections, we're going to have a number of candidates who perhaps aren't particularly clear about what reform stands for, and they maybe don't have the life experience or the force of personality or even the conviction to be able to implement the policies that are going to be absolutely necessary. For example, cutting taxation. We've already seen how councils run by reform are really struggling to reduce council tax. And yet that should be a key plank of what we're trying to achieve. So I think that we need to be really careful about how we, if you like, sell that opportunity that if you join reform, we're on a mission. We're guys and gals on a mission to change the UK. And you're not going to do that by just sitting answering a few emails from your constituents every week and turning up in the House and sort of nodding your head. I know there's an element in which you will vote with the party, and actually that's an important part of being an MP. You're part of that party for a purpose, which is to get through legislation and to vote it in a strong majority. But what we need is for people to be really committed to that. Because what we don't want to see is, like we've got with the Labour Party now, a lot of very inexperienced MPs who, because Keir Starmer says, oh, we're going to change the inheritance tax regime for farmers because it's going to be good for the country. And they all say, oh, yes, Starmer, yes, great. And then 10 months later, we turn around, about 14 months later, turn around, and he says, actually, we're not going to do that now because we've had so many problems with it, and it's caused a lot of issues. We're now not going to do that. And they go, oh, yes, Keir, that's great. That's lovely, Keir. I don't want to be in a party that U-turns. And obviously Margaret Thatcher had that
Agreed.
famous speech, didn't she? We need to be clear what we stand for. We need to be clear what we're trying to achieve, and we need to be clear about how we're going to do it. But that will take a certain personality, and it's whether we can collect together enough of those personalities to make it happen. But I do think Esther McVeigh would be my top choice for that.
You know, just coming to, I think the reason why the Labour have got so many U-turns is even though they were in opposition for 14 years and under 5 years with Starmer, I don't think they really had a vision or a plan. Bar the only thing they seemed to have anything really thought through was net zero, from what I've seen so far, and the Chagos deal, which seemed to be quite well advanced. So apart from that, they seem to be making it up as they go along.
But don't you think partly, Dan, that's where we are in the economy? I think that socialist governments can have a much better ride when either they've got a real purpose, they've got a real, for example, after the Second World War, there was this new vision. As you say, the word vision is critical here. And the government decided we have to change things. We the war has decimated the UK. It has, we've got areas that are completely broken down, wiped out, bombed. We've got to rebuild. And there was a sense in which it regenerated morally, emotionally, and physically the UK. And we suddenly had a new welfare state. We had the Beveridge Report that outlined all these different recommendations. It was like Britain was entering a new era. And the Labour
NHS, yeah.
Party, the NHS, exactly, and all the other welfare reforms, well, the welfare state, actually, the real introduction of the full welfare state. And that regenerated the UK. But you're right, there was a vision behind it. But I think the problem is that when the 2024 election was called, even then the UK economy was stuttering. Even then GDP had fallen, was flatlining. Even then we were having problems with all sorts of economic issues. And of course, debt had hugely risen. Our deficits were getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think Rishi Sunak saw that. I think that was also one of his causes belli to call a general election because he needed a mandate to be able to make some changes, but he didn't get that mandate, of course. And unfortunately, I think what's happened is that Labour have taken the reins and thought, right, great, what should we do? What do we know? Well, we know how to tax and we know how to
Not to
spend.
spend money on worthless causes, like you say.
So I think that's why they have no vision, because I don't think they quite understand that at the point where the economy is now, we don't need more taxation and more spending. We need the opposite. We need to free up business, the lifeblood of this country. We need to free up businesses by deregulating, by enabling employment, by enabling growth, by encouraging innovation, by encouraging investment, all the things that are not happening. We need to keep those young people in the UK who are flying to Dubai and other parts of the world right now because they see no future staying here. We want to keep those entrepreneurs, those the inventors, the scientists, the technologists, the people who can innovate. Why can't we have our own version of Apple, Nvidia?
Yeah, all those things, I'd agree with them. I do think though the Labour have missed a big opportunity in that the whoever came into power now at the last election was going to have to tackle the welfare state, which had grown ballooned under the Tories, and it's got getting worse under Labour. And actually, you know, that was the one thing where they kind of they crumbled, didn't they? There was a threat of a rebellion for quite modest welfare reforms. Actually, someone else is going to have to do that, probably us. It's probably going to be very harsh, the austerity that's going to be required just to keep the country afloat. Labour could have done that more sympathetically this parliament because that's in their tradition. They're more empathetic with those groups of people, and I think they would have spent more time on it, you know, to do it in a more kind of you know, let's say detailed way than the next government is going to have to come in, who's probably going to have the money markets breathing down the neck, saying something like, you need to cut 25% of welfare spending in the next 6 months. So come back to us. If you want any more money, come back to us when you can show us a plan on how you can deliver that. So I think there's a massive missed opportunity from Labour, and they have betrayed their own kind of base in a lot of ways by kind of, you know, basically being too cowardly to do what was required. And I don't think anyone's going to do it now. Starmer had one opportunity, had the big majority. Is in office, but not in power in many ways, as they say now, isn't he?
Yes. Now, Ken, can I reflect back your question? So you were asking us who we would like to see defect potentially from Conservatives to Reform. Who would you like to see defect?
Well, I would like to see David Frost is my favourite. I think David Frost is a huge politician. I think he could add a huge amount to our party. I would also like to see, if possible, a couple of defections from the Labour side. And there's a couple of people that I think are possibles. One's a guy called Graeme Stringer,
Oh,
who's
yes.
I think would, yeah. And there's another guy called Mike Tapp, who's I think Environment Secretary. And I think those two are possibilities. So anyway, well, it would be nice to get a couple from the other side just to balance things out, because this meme that, you know, we're going to end up as the Tories 2.0 is beginning to get a bit worrying, I think.
Yes, I agree. In fact, I mean, there are other names. Steve Baker, who I don't think actually is an MP anymore, but I think he would be
No,
good.
no,
Jacob Rees-Mogg,
oh yes, very popular.
very popular. Definitely
Yeah.
would like Moggy to join. Although he's said he's not going to, even though his daughter is a Reform member. And I think she's working on him, you know, every time Jacob's saying, Mary, do some more history homework. She's saying, look, Dad, I'll tell you about history if you don't know already. And trying to explain how revolution comes from forward-thinking people. I can just imagine her doing that. So I think that, yeah, there are probably a number of people, but I think, Ken, your concern is very real. I think that's very real amongst Reform members. Now, obviously, Dan is a member of the board. So, Dan, you can perhaps speak on this better than Ken and I can. We just have the, you know, the conversations we have with perhaps our local members. In terms of that sense of Reform being Conservative 2.0, or indeed even the view about what the Conservatives have become, what do you sense amongst the membership of Reform?
I think there's definitely, I think Ken expresses a commonly held view, you know, a worry that we'll become, you know, Tories 2.0. And if we do, we've kind of failed really, because we had got one opportunity to do this properly. I do, even when people come over that I think are probably going to add value, like Danny Kruger, for example, who I think has been a very good addition for lots of reasons. People may not know anything about him, but they just see another Tories come over and they're a little bit, well, why are we doing that? Why do we need them? They're the reason why we exist, because they've let everyone down, kind of thing. You know, most people in Reform, I think, are probably right of centre, the majority, and would have probably voted either UKIP or Conservative in the past. So I think there's that. But I'd say I think we do need to be selective, but I think we've got to recognise that we do need more people with experience. And as long as we get the right ones, there are still some good right of centre MPs in the Conservative Party. But the longer they stay there, I think they are undermining their arguments, you know, because coming over now at 30%, you're not really taking a risk, are you? And whereas if you'd come over, you know, straight after the election, Pete, they'd have got more respect, more credibility, probably a lot more flak from their old party. But then that's politics, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. There's a certain level of kind of inauthenticity that if you jump ship, you know, just sort of 6 months before general election, and I suppose reform will have to have some kind of policy about that. And I know that Nigel has spoken about this, you know, about not wanting to keep that gate open indefinitely. And I think Zia has also mentioned this, that, you know, we're not necessarily going to be a party of suddenly the Conservatives beginning to look at the, you know, look at the general election down the sort of, you know, the double barrel of a shotgun, and realize if they carry on in that direction, they're not going to have a seat at the next general election. And so therefore let's join reform. But that doesn't necessarily guarantee that they will get a seat with reform, because
No,
again, I think
true.
lots of people would see right through that.
Yeah, that's right. There's no guaranteed seats. And I think ultimately, who comes over, I think, is the decision of the leader, and then the final analysis, as it should be.
Okay, I've got a couple of more left field questions. Do you think there will be a major economic crash in the coming year?
I think possibly, and I don't think it'll be of our own making. I think more likely is something's going to happen internationally, and that would affect everybody, and but it'll affect us a lot worse because we're in such a weak position, like us and say France, I would say, in a similar situation, because we've got so little, you know, room to borrow money, the productivity is so low, debt so high, and the economy, I think the real economy is probably in recession already. But the figures are just kind of, they're able to keep it on the edge. So I think we are very vulnerable at the moment. And it does worry me. I really feel sorry for people who've got big mortgages, young families, you know, who will probably be worse affected by this. But I do think there's something we do, you know, maybe this will create the conditions where the country will be willing to take the medicine that we really need, really, which is, I think, we've got to get people back into work. We've got to cut the welfare state, and it's going to be painful, whichever way you look at it now.
Yeah, I whether there will be an economic crash, I don't think we will necessarily see it in the form that it took in 2008, where we basically saw an implosion of the subprime market in America, and that pulled lots of other hedge funds and insurance companies into that black hole. I suspect what we will see is gold continuing to go on a parabolic increase. We've seen that with gold and silver. And of course, that's related, of course, to what's happened in China, where they basically shut the doors on people being able to sell silver. So that's obviously created its own demand. And I think we're going to see this price of precious metals continue to rise this year. Now, of course, this, for many people who, you know, are perhaps not aware of this, this does devalue the currency. Our currency has apparently devalued by 40% since 2020. So we are seeing inflation on an absolute rip up, but we don't notice it. And I think this is the worst kind of economic devaluation, because you might feel it as you go and buy a coffee, or you go and do your weekly shop, or you know, you're buying goods and services. Costs seem to be going up all the time. Dan, you mentioned energy earlier on. Of course, this is critical. Of course, our energy costs are absolutely critical to creating a Britain that can regenerate and create economic activity, and that has to be dealt with. The net zero, as Richard Tice says, is not zero. It's absolutely nutty. We are making ourselves far less competitive and far less economically sound by doing that. But I would also say, tangentially to that, we must think about defence. And in Alistair Heath wrote a blistering article yesterday in the Telegraph. If you haven't read it, this is the 8th of January, so I know this might be going out in a few days. So on the 8th of January, look back at the Telegraph if you haven't already, look at Alistair Heath's piece. And he is making the argument there that without a strong Britain, that's got strong, it stands strong shoulder to shoulder with its international partners, international leadership. It can't challenge activity in the rest of the world. So, for example, with Trump and Venezuela, what's happened there? We cannot stand shoulder to shoulder. It might not be shoulder to shoulder in the sense that we agree with what Trump has done, but we can't gently challenge, softly challenge, firmly challenge, because we just don't hold that position anymore. He would say, yeah, well, whatever Starmer says, it's fine, but it's totally irrelevant. It's like my cat meowing at me, go away, irrelevant. And so I think that our economy, and in fact, the world's economy, because the world is in a precarious position financially, it's not just our country being hugely indebted, it's many other countries as well. I think, Japan's debt to GDP is something like 270%. Now, it doesn't affect them so much because they're a net exporter. We're a net importer. So we have got all the risks and none of the rewards.
Vulnerability,
And
yeah.
correct. And therefore, we are in a precarious financial position. And therefore, we have to make sure that our borders are strong and that our defense is solid. Because without that, being in a weak economic position will open us up to attack. And I think that this is where I'm not quite convinced that the Labour government understands the implications. These are subtleties, but they are vital. And if we don't do this, we are really risking the outcomes of the UK. Yes, both from the point of view of war, whether that's hot war or techno war, but also economic war, which I think could be more the outcome.
I think all those points you've raised there, Wendy, I think those we've kind of been maneuvered into that position by political choices over the last 30 years, and I think it's unforgivable. The kind of Blair, the Blair and New Labour, and then the Tories under Cameron and all the ones that came after him, they've all done this incrementally. We had an independent energy independence. We're a net exporter of electricity. We had a strong military. I think when Blair took over in 97, the debt was very low, or it might even be Cameron actually. The inheritance he got, he had Thatcher's inheritance, and now we're in this position now where we're basically at the cliff edge as a country, aren't we, on so many fronts. It really is. I mean, reform can't get into government soon enough. But just as a, I actually, so maybe being a bit controversial here, the more I read about Venezuela, I do support what Trump has done there. I mean, I heard someone the other day say to me, I can't cite the source, but it was a credible one, is that Venezuela was a massive exporter of terror, bigger even than Iran was, because it was a center. They were supporting regimes around the world, including Iran and others, that would basically, these are people would put, bombs on our streets, and actually getting rid of Maduro and America stepping in to run the country, albeit for their own reasons, I think has made the world a safer place overnight. And I think whether you agree with the politics and international law, you've got to look at it from a common sense point of view. It was a good thing to do, and we're all going to benefit from that in the short to medium term, I would say.
Well, I probably would differ on my opinion on that one, Dan. I think it's about the principle of the activity which really matters. And I think that Trump has breached international law here. And I think that if we're going to say it's all right for Trump to do that because he's got genuine reasons and he's got principles which he wishes to maintain, that Maduro was causing risk to the rest of the world, etc., as you say. Putin could argue the same thing. Putin could say, yes, and that's exactly why I entered Ukraine. Well, why is it okay for Trump, but it's not okay for Putin? I understand the context is different. I understand the Zelensky is not Maduro. Nevertheless, I very much do believe in international law and order because I think that's the way by which trust is grown, is developed, is maintained between countries. And I would never wish to give somebody the green card to be able to enter somebody else's country and behave in that kind of way. So I feel slightly differently. I do understand why he's done it, and I think the results will be, they will speak for themselves. And certainly, we've seen lots of Venezuelans delighted that this has happened. You know, so we can see that the people of Venezuela are actually extremely pleased that, you know,
We'll get
they
a
feel that
better
Trump is
deal
their savior. Yes, quite.
under the
And of
Americans. They
course,
may not get everything, but they'll get a better deal, yeah.
they may well. But again, we have to be very careful because what's the principle behind this? And if we're going to say this principle is okay, we could find this breaking out all across the rest of the world.
Good.
Ken,
Well,
you
look,
asked
I'm
the
aware.
question about the economy. I'd like to come back to you. You're not getting out of this, Mr. Ferguson. What
Well,
are your thoughts about the economy then?
if you go back to my podcast that I did with Mark Littlewood, we had a long conversation on it, and we had a big disagreement over it because Mark doesn't think there's going to be an economic crash, and I do. So that's your answer, really. I
Okay,
think I
put the
think
link below and
the way the
go back to that.
yeah, I'll put the link in the show notes. I'm going to try and finish off by asking a series of questions which are capable of being answered in a single word. Firstly, do you think there will be major civil unrest in the coming year? I'm talking like violence and riots and either in the UK or in Europe.
UK, no. Europe, possibly.
Europe, yes.
So yeah.
UK, no.
Okay. Do you think Reform will win the Scottish parliamentary election this year? Or do you think we can come second?
Second, yes.
Yeah, second.
And can we win in Wales?
Yes, winning in Wales, yes.
Yes, tiny margin.
Windy?
Yes.
Will there be a peace deal in Ukraine this year?
Yes.
Okay, I'll go with yes.
And will Starmer send troops to Ukraine?
Yes.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
Will the Iranian government be overthrown?
Yes.
Yes.
And will China invade Taiwan?
No.
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 I'll tell you why. Because Trump has just taken away a big chunk of their oil supply by taking over Venezuela.
True.
Good. Well, I think that's just about it. But what I would like to do, because this is a prediction that we can look back on in a year's time and see who got closest, can you give me a percentage of the overall reform vote in the May the 7th elections?
34%.
34? I'll
Yeah,
go
I'd go.
36. Dan?
I will go with 32 just to be different, but I would say it's definitely over 30. Definitely.
Well, as I say, we can come back and have a look and see how stupid we were in the future.
Well, of course,
Well,
there are some other economic indicators as well we could predict, Ken. Inflation, what will inflation be like? The official measure, of course, we know unofficially it's far higher. Interest rates and employment, those would be interesting ones to predict at some point.
Unemployment, what do you think that will be? It's
Well,
5% at the minute.
I think it's going to be 8%.
Double.
I wouldn't say quite doubling, but I think it, because I think a lot of those people will be wiped out of the figures. Remember, those figures are massaged, but I think we'll have a lot more people who are economically inactive. And what worries me most is the NEETs, the not in employment, education or training. I think that is a tinderbox waiting to happen. And if we're talking about civil unrest, I could see it happening with that group of young people who are disaffected. They have been basically left to their own devices, and all they're getting is the heroin of state funding to keep them going. But there's no purpose, that we don't not valuing their lives, and I think it's a shocking moral degradation of the UK and a certain, you know, percentage of our very, very valuable workforce. So to me, you know, I think we're going to see more NEETs. I think we're going to see more people economically inactive. I think we're going to see the welfare bill continue to grow. And I think that we are going to see unemployment rise as well. Sorry, not a really positive outlook, is it? But that's why you need to vote reform,
Not sure we want
because.
you in my lifeboat, Wendy.
But you see, I'll have a turquoise life belt, Dan, and it's going to
Good.
say Nigel on it.
Good. Well, let's call it a day at that. Thanks both very much for
Thank you
being
very
on.
much.
And I think I'm
Pleasure.
right in saying I'm going to see you both next Friday. So we'll look
Yes.
forward to that. A very special podcast and it'll be recorded next week. So thanks again for being on, and we'll speak soon.
Yeah.
Bye now.
Thank you. Good to
Both.
see you.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.